Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
George, Amy and Emma Shepherd are an Australian indie pop trio formed in 2009. At the ARIA Music Awards of 2013, Shepherd were nominated for Best Independent Release for Let Me Down Easy. At the 2014 ceremony, they were nominated for Album of the Year, Best Group, Best Independent Release, Best Pop Release, Song of the Year, Producer of the Year and Best Video. They have achieved over 2 billion total streams across all DSPs, 36 platinum awards across 19 countries, including 2 times platinum in the US and 6 times platinum in Australia. They performed at the halftime show for the Nashville Predators versus the Toronto Maple Leafs NHL hockey match in 2023. In 2024, they played the NRL Las Vegas Fremont Street Experience to 20,000 people. They performed at the AFL Grand Final performance. Performances on television include The Jimmy Fallon Show, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, NBC's The Today Show, Live with Kelly and Michael, Radio Disney Awards, and Good Day USA. Shepherd released Bombs Away in 2014, which reached number 2 on the ARIA Albums charts. They released Watching the Sky in 2018, which reached number 1 on the ARIA Album charts. They released Kaleidoscope Eyes in 2021, which reached number 2 on the ARIA Albums charts. And in 2024, they released Zora, which reached number 8 on the ARIA Album charts. Based now in Nashville, up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Emma, Amy and George from Shepherd. So how are you guys doing and where are you in the world?
We are great, and we're in Nashville, Tennessee, each in an apartment. So George is behind me in the apartment that way, and Amy's in the apartment in front of me.
That's cool.
Hey, I can hear that.
Oh, lovely. I'm going to ask this question to George, and the next question will go around the screen. So, George, I know that Shepherd is your surname, so how did it come to be that you chose it as the band's name?
It was a placeholder at the beginning. There were a couple of contenders. I know the Third Culture Kids was probably going to be the name. But at the end of the day, we were kind of like, oh, look, Shepherd, that's who we are. We're a family. Hmm. It's our last name. It might just be a nice way to like leave our legacy behind. I don't know, whatever that means. But it probably just shows a lack of creativity, really. We've really enjoyed the name. Like, I think there's been no point where we've regretted calling the band okay. Shepherd. And the third Culture Kids could have been cool because we grew up in Papua New Guinea. So a Third Culture Kid is somebody who's grown up in a culture outside of their home culture. And then when they come back, they have a little bit of trouble reassimilating into their home culture. So we thought that was a bit of a clever name, but I think Shepherd was just short, like one word.
Yeah.
And when we finally got the logo done, I think that was the deciding factor of like, oh, this looks great. I think this is the branding. This is the name. That's kind of how we went about it.
Okay. I'm going around the room. Emma, starting with you first. So at what age, whether it was a child or a teenager, do you think, cool, you want to be in this music creative space? And then how did you connect with the siblings and then leading to the journey of where we are today?
When we were younger, we'd always be listening to some great music, and we didn't have a lot in Papua New Guinea. Like, we didn't have radio, but we had Dad's vinyl collection, and Dad would always wake us up with, you know, Dolly Parton and America and some really great artists. So we've always loved music. We did piano. We learnt theory, and so it wasn't that exciting for us. But for me, I would have to say, I was always wanting to be in the fashion industry. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew that I was creative. Yeah, so when I finished school, Amy and George had already started singing together and they needed a bass player. So I learned how to play bass for the band. And yeah, and then once I joined the band, that's when we started touring and becoming a bit more serious. But Amy and George have their own stories with that
Yes.
as well.
Okay, so before we get to them, so when you decided to start learn the bass guitar, was it an easy thing to pick up or was it a bit of a challenge?
I think a bit of both. I learned with a teacher in sorry, I learned with a teacher in Brisbane for a week, and I just was like, no, it's not for me. I found it really difficult. And I think especially for me, I need like a really good teacher who is understanding and patient. And when after a week it wasn't working, Dad suggested that I go back to Papua New Guinea and learn with my teacher from high school, sorry, from middle school. And so I decided to give it another crack. And when I went back, he was exactly the teacher that I needed and the person that would be able to teach me bass. So I went back to Papua New Guinea and for 3 weeks did a, every day kind of like a bass boot camp and learned the
Yes.
Shepherd songs. I'm still learning how to play bass to this day. You're always learning, but yeah, that's kind of where my journey began.
Lovely. Amy, your story.
I really wanted to be like a country music star from like before 10 years old, and I used to I found my dad's old guitar in storage, and I had like three strings, and I'd walk around the house pretending that I was Shania Twain. And then eventually, I think I was 10 when my parents got it fixed up and decided to get me guitar lessons with the same music teacher that taught Emma bass. And I kind of fell in love with writing music. He challenged me to begin writing my own songs, and although they weren't very good when I was that age, I really loved the process of being able to tell stories through music. And so when it came time for me to finish school and go to university, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do outside of music. So I ended up going and studying music performance. And part of one of my assignments was to write and record an EP, so a 5-track album, and promote it and whatnot. So I started working on it, and of course left it to the last minute. And I was kind of freaking out, and then George like popped his head into my bedroom, and he was like, "What is all that? What's that racket? Like, what's all that noise?" So I'm working on this song, and it's terrible. And so I showed it to him, and then he had all of these ideas, and we just worked really well together, and we finished the song. I got great marks, and that really was, the start of Shepherd. We After that, we got some studio time. We wrote some songs. We started doing some like just free gigs around Brisbane. We started building a fan base, and it wasn't before long that we had like Australian managers reaching out, and it kind of snowballed from there.
So, what is subjects are included in perform music performance at university? What subjects are you taught?
So we were taught music theory, we were taught production, we were taught like how to perform, we were taught music business. They're the ones that I can remember, like
Remember.
copyright, all those kind of
Yes.
things. So it was pretty interesting, and I was only there for a year before I, because it was more of a, just like a bridging course to go into university. And I loved it. I learned so much in that year. And after that year, the band really started to
Take off.
take off. So that
So when you
was.
say teach you how to perform, is that teach you stage presence, how to interact with audience, how to have the energy of the room? Am I correct in my understanding?
Yes, that's
Okay.
correct. And
Okay.
and then you had to perform to like some of the other students, and they might have been like, more like business students, and they were all we're all incorporated in each other's
Yes.
assignments, which is a really cool way of doing things. It was really practical.
Okay, cool. George, your story.
Yes, sir. I was born in Perth, and no, I it wasn't like something that was on my radar where I wanted to be a musician. I was never really had like dreams of being a music star. It was just like something that I enjoyed as a hobby. And I taught myself how to play piano in, well, like Emma said, we did do like the the lessons when we were kids, and it just wasn't that fun. You know, it was like, you know, you have to hold your fingers like this and not just play. Like there were rules that you couldn't just express yourself. You know, I kind of really enjoyed that element of it. So acting was more my forte. I really enjoyed theater and you know, shooting short films. And like in high school, I did a whole bunch of short films and did all the musicals and plays and whatnot. And I was in Sydney studying to be an actor. And it was like, I think I was 23 or 22, something like that. And I came home for holidays and Amy was working on this song. And I think music was kind of in my blood, and I knew I could sing, and I really enjoyed putting sounds together and like playing the piano and learning, you know, Coldplay songs and whatnot. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't ever like on my radar as a profession. And it wasn't until Amy and I started writing together that it was like, oh, maybe this could be something. You know, we kind of sound good together. Our harmonies are really nicely blended. I guess that sibling harmony thing was a big part of it. And we just enjoyed writing together and kept going. And I guess the more water the plant gets, the larger it grows.
When you started planting those seeds, whomever wants to answer this, did you think, cool, we're going to push and work and see what happens? Was the intention to be as successful as you guys have been, or did you just go with the flow?
I think it's very much we've just gone with the flow, but also that's not to say we haven't dreamed big. I think part of our success has been our naivety of just like, let's just go and see what happens. And I think that's really important, not just for musicians, but for anyone who is sort of starting a business or going into something that turns into something big. I think, yeah, sometimes you just have to dive all in and think about any issues later, because that can really hold you back from trying new things or taking risks. So yeah, I think that's something that we've always done, is just like gone all in, and which is why we're here in Nashville at the moment. Just moved from Australia because we're like, well, why not? Like if there's no failures, like there's only learnings.
Exactly.
And yeah, so I think we've really used that to grow and expand our career.
How long have you guys been in Nashville for?
Nearly a year coming up, which is insane to think about. But yeah, we got here in October last year.
And was it, as Amy said, to see what was out there in the horizon outside of Australia and see what was happening in the music world? I know Nashville's quite big with writing and music, et cetera, et cetera. So was it to expand your roots, so to speak?
Yeah, exactly. And we had always thought about moving over, but we just never found that spot that we felt like it could be home until Amy visited in 2018. And she loved Nashville and thought this could be a place for us to move over and be able to tour from and connect to our US fans. And then, of course, COVID happened. Yes. So, yeah, we had been talking about moving for a long time. And then once we finally started the visa process and got the visas, we were like, okay, now we've got them. Let's figure this out.
Yeah. From 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, what motivates it? What invigorates it? Is it easy every time? Is it a similar process or routine? So handing this question over to George and then whoever wants to add in.
Well, I think it's different every time. I mean, songs, they arrive. I don't know how else to describe it. It's not like, it almost feels like we're not responsible for creating them, but they sort of come out of the ether and arrive at our antenna or something like that. You know, there's something more about there's a source somewhere that we can access. I'm not sure, but I feel like songs will either come out of focus, you know, like there might be like a little guitar line or a chorus idea or even just a title, you know, a title is enough, but you always need like that springboard to kind of go into a collaborative session. It can be really painful going in with no ideas and just sitting there trying to force something out. Like it's not fun to do it that way. It's always great to have that like special spark of something that's true inspiration. And bringing that into a room is always fundamentally necessary, I think. But it is, it's like a piece of pottery, something that you're slowly building and sort of scraping bits away and adding more and more detail as you go. But it always starts as this like really weird, unfocused blob of something.
Yes.
And it's about having that vision in your head and hearing where it needs to go, and you slowly carve away at it and just keep adding pieces to it, stripping pieces away, starting again, rewriting a new verse. Oh no, this is not a chorus. This is a verse. Now we need to write a better chorus. It's about sort of rearranging things and experimenting and just having fun with it. Really, it's all about, you know, trying to find that little tickle in your soul that goes like, oh, this is exciting. Like I want to show people this. Like that's where the magic lies. And however that comes about, whatever you do to create that feeling, I think that's the important part of it. And there's no one way to do a song. Yeah. It's always been different, and you're always working with different people, and it's about sort of being in tune and riding that wave of inspiration and creativity and doing your best and working hard to get it right.
I've spoken now to over 250 artists, and so many of them use the same analogy, however, in different words, of channeling, bringing through from the ether their creativity and being the vessel to do so. And when you mentioned pottery, I saw that movie Ghost and you guys being there and the ether being the ghost channeling all the information through to you through the pottery. So it was just a cute, funny analogy when you said the pottery that movie came to my mind straight away.
So, yeah, that's what I feel like it is. It's kind of like some people just have a stronger antenna than other people. And then, you know, we interpret that through our creative spirit, whatever that is, into making the art itself. But that inspiration, that source, whatever that is, it comes from a different place.
I totally agree with you on that comment. So you guys reference that you work or collaborate with other artists or writers or producers. Amy, when there's someone new that you haven't as yet collaborated with before, and they come into the room with the three of you, does it take a moment for you guys to get used to their energy and the way they work? Do you dive straight in, or is it a moment of like, oh, let's get to know this person?
Yeah, we always liken it to speed dating, because you never know what you're going to get. Sometimes you have chemistry, other times you don't, and you really just have to navigate it in the room. But most of the time, we've had great experiences, and collaborating with other writers is amazing because it gives you another perspective, or like different tricks that they use, or different, it is a different experience, and experience in the way that they songwrite is really helpful. Yeah, we've found that that's been one of our biggest assets for a long time. Like the whole first album, it was just us who wrote it. So my brother, myself, and Jay Bovino, who is our third songwriter in Australia. And we wrote the whole first album, and we were really reluctant when it came to writing the second album to have anyone else in the room, because we're like, we know that this chemistry works. Like, we did such a great job on the first album. We're going to do it again. And then we eventually let somebody trusted into the room, and it worked really well. We're like, okay, maybe this isn't so bad after all, and we can let other people in, and it's going to be better for the whole experience. And, you know, a hit's a hit, so it doesn't matter who's on it. Like,
yes.
Let's try and get the best songs. And I think that's, it's been part of the best part of our jobs, is like meeting different writers and seeing how they are differently creative to us.
I'm going to lead this question to Emma, and then ask Amy and George for your perceptions. This is quite an interesting discussion that I have with all the artists I interview, and I'd like your guys' observations. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls, are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990, and cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. I was reading an article a couple of months ago, and it was saying that in the UK, there's a basket of goods that they analyze prices for tax purposes in some way. And vinyls have been in that basket for the longest time, but because now of the upsurge of CD sales, CDs have been put back into this basket because of their popularity again. But then we've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. Emma, you first. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Yeah, for streaming, it's good and it's bad.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's great that anybody could put their music out there and be heard and all of that. But then also the music industry is very saturated with a lot of music and it's harder to get your name out there. We were lucky with Geronimo as well, because that was just before Spotify came out, I believe. Right, George?
Yeah, it was like a year or two before Spotify was sort of universal.
I think there's good pros and cons to it. And it's interesting you say that about the CDs, because I was just thinking, like, who buys CDs these days? Like, I know vinyl are back, and I've actually got our vinyl here.
Yes.
But I didn't know that about CDs, which is very interesting. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'd say that there's pros and cons to it, like anything else. Yeah.
And just to add in before we go to Amy, that the stats are showing it's the teenagers and early 20s that are buying it, not the older people who are now nostalgic. It's the teenagers and early 20s who are saying, I want something physical. I don't want everything always on my phone. I'm sick of that experience. Amy?
It's like going full circle.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Amy?
Yeah.
Anything to add?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I didn't realize that either, but I think it's important for artists to have lots of different ways that people can consume music. I don't think there's one way anymore. You have to be accessible from multiple different platforms, and you have to be very versatile as a musician these days. For Zora, we even have it available on cassette, because that's been a really interesting collectible item.
Yeah.
And I think even more so, like when we, at our shows, we try and sign our CDs, so that's like an extra incentive for fans, because they get, as you said, they get something physical, it's signed, it's personal, we write their names on it. And so, yeah, I think that's really important as well. And it's great, because it's just another way that we can get our music out there and also build revenue so we can continue touring.
It's been great and hard for us as well, because we get put into a lot of playlists on Spotify, which is amazing, because our songs get heard. But I feel that people then listen to a playlist and they might love the songs, but don't necessarily see who sings them. So that's been hard for us navigating that.
George, anything to add?
Yeah, I'm in Camp CD with you, because I feel like it's nice to be able to cherry pick singles and, you know, just be able to search any song that you've ever known and have it in a couple of seconds. But there's something spiritual, like you said, about an exchange of, here is a body of work that the artist has created, and they've like crafted it meticulously to be this listening experience from start to finish. You know, let's not butcher that up and like carve it up into something that they didn't intend. Let's listen to it from start to finish and have that experience that it was intended to be listened to as. I feel that has kind of been lost over the years, and it's nice to know that the young kids coming through nowadays are bringing that back somewhat, and they understand the importance of what the artist has created, and they you know, they want to be able to hold that physical thing in their hands. And I think it's really cool. But also what the girls are saying of like the fact that streaming has made music so accessible, is very cool. And the fact that we're living in that day and age is really special. But I don't think you could ever substitute listening to a CD or a vinyl or a cassette, you know, from start to finish and having that whole experience.
And also the sound quality. So I was living overseas and I came back a few years ago. And last year I wanted to buy a CD player because to listen to my CDs. And everyone's like, no, there's no way you're going to find a CD player anywhere. You can't get them, et cetera, et cetera. In South Africa, there's a platform called Takealot, which is similar to Amazon, but slightly different. And I went to check and there were so many options for me to choose from. I had to narrow it down and narrow it down again. I eventually got the player. And the point I'm trying to make is that when I listen to songs on the CD compared to on Bluetooth from streaming platforms, the sound quality is completely different. So I've got my streaming subscription. So on the CD player, when I listen to that same song off of the Bluetooth from that platform compared to listen to the CD feels like you're engulfed into a sound wave of magnificence. It's so fantastic. But when you listen to it from the streaming platform, it feels like dull and squashed and flat compared to that. And so many people especially of the younger generations, don't have that experience of that envelopment of sound. So hopefully some of those people will start to experience the sound quality of listening to it on the physical. So you guys reference your latest album, Zora. So tell us more.
Yeah, so Zora was kind of born out of a dark time in our lives. And I mean, COVID was a big part of that. We released our previous album, Kaleidoscope Eyes, right in the middle of lockdowns.
Yeah.
Because we spent the whole majority of 2020 working really hard and writing and releasing and shooting videos. And our plan was we'll keep ourselves busy by writing and releasing a song every month of 2020. Even though the world shut down, that's okay. We can still work. We can still get music out to our fans. And then at the end of it, we'll have 12 songs that we'll put into an album. And by February 2021, surely COVID's going to be over and we'll be able to tour it. As we know now, that didn't go to plan. And COVID was still very much a thing in February of 2021. And we released this album and it was essentially like, there it is, and we can't tour. And that, as any artist will probably tell you, touring is the greatest part of any album cycle because it's the culmination of all the hard work and it's the point where you get to connect with the fans and go out there and meet everybody and hear the stories and how it's affecting people's lives. And you get to feel, you get that feedback, which, you know, most artists crave. It's like, you like the music, tell me about it. Like how is it affecting you? And what's the vibe? Like you don't get that from just looking at streaming numbers and reading comments on social media. It's like by being at the shows, seeing people singing the music, we didn't get any of that. So, to try and make ourselves feel better, we just went straight into writing the fourth album. We didn't know what it was going to be about. We didn't know what the songs were going to be trying to say, but we just started writing. And the further and further we got into the process, we realized that a lot of the songs were about, you know, holding on through the dark times and waiting for that sunrise to come and warm up the day again. And it's not forever. Like hard times never last. It's always going to be a new dawn. Like, That theme of resilience and hope, I think, was kind of permeating through a lot of the songs. And we realized that that's what the album was going to be about. And when it came time to naming the album, we'd taken a lot of inspiration from our grandma, our Croatian grandma who had fled. She was a refugee and she'd fled war-torn Yugoslavia and landed in Kalgoorlie, of all places, which is a small mining town in Western Australia. She didn't speak a word of English. She never saw her family again. She's had a very tumultuous, turbulent life full of these really tragic situations, but she still remains the most resilient and hopeful and positive and, you know, full of love person that we've ever met in our lives. And we're not sure how she does it, but it's like a superhuman ability to love. And we just remembered her a lot during these times and how she manages to keep a smile on her face. And to pay homage to her and, you know, her legacy and our Croatian heritage, when it came time to name the album, we looked up what dawn was in Croatian.
Okay.
And Google Translate, lo and behold, it came up as her name, Zora.
Oh, wow.
Just a complete coincidence. And we were like, our jaws hit the floor. We thought it was a glitch at first, you know, we couldn't believe it. And we were just like, That's serendipity. We got to choose that. Oh, the name has chosen us. You know, that's the name of the album. It was just too perfect. So that was like the theme and the aesthetic of the album was this beautiful, golden, warm embrace of a new dawn. And, you know, being able to put our grandma's name to it was just the cherry on the cake.
I was listening to the album and a lot of the songs and it's very uplifting and it's warm and it feels like you're giving a hug to everyone. It's really awesome, so thank you for that.
I'm glad that comes across.
George already referenced the feedback regarding the albums and the connection with the audience. Emma and Amy, do you have anything to add regarding what else you guys enjoy about performing live?
Yeah, I just think it's like the energy in the room. It's the best part of our jobs, and it takes so long to tour and like to get to these places. And once you're there, it just feels like a huge celebration and you just can't match that energy anywhere else. Live music brings people together in such a unique way. And whether it's a happy song or a sad song, it just makes you remember that you're not alone. And especially during these dark times, you can remember back to this special place of connection. And yeah, I just feel so grateful that this is our jobs and we get to be, like, connect with people for a living. And I think that's really special and unique.
I think it's just nice to know as well that, like, no two shows are the same. You know, it's like you would think that touring artists would sort of get bored of the monotony of, like, doing the same show every night. Yes. You know, it's like, oh, it's just a new city, new town, whatever. It doesn't ever get like that. Every room is different. Every crowd is different. Every city is different. It has a different energy, a different vibe. So it's forever and endlessly exciting for us being on tour. Because like Amy said, it's like some of these audiences haven't seen us perform ever in their lives. And they're so excited that the moment's finally arrived. And that moment where we get to get up on stage and we hear the cheer and it's like, we all made it together. And it's this real communal celebration, and it's new every single night. I think it's magic, you know, it's a really beautiful thing.
So just bring it out there that you need to add South Africa to your list of destinations. Yes?
I know. Absolutely. We'd love to. We did Oppie Coppy all those years ago, which was one of the first performances I did. Yes. And yeah, we'd love to come back. Okay. We'll go back to.
I think South Africa was the first ever international country that we hit outside of Australia.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. Emma, you first, if you had to push play to five songs by other artists, once to finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
So Amsterdam by Gregory Alan Isaacoff. Spit of You by Sam Fender. Chris Stapleton, White Horse. What have I been playing lately? That's three.
Yes.
I would say probably Love Like That by Shepherd because I love that song.
Yep.
And then I've been listening to Lainey Wilson. Amy's going to steal it. Amy's going to be like, Amy introduced me to this song, and that's all that's coming to my mind at the moment.
That's right.
Man ought to know. Perfect. Oh, things a man ought to know. Yeah.
Amy, handing over to you next.
I have been listening to Chappelle Roan because there's so much hype around her, and I was like, what is this all about? And I have fallen in love with her song Good Luck Babe. I think she's a really interesting artist. We went and saw the Twister movie the other night. Yes. So I really love the song by Miranda Lambert called Ain't in Kansas Anymore. I just think that's such a cool sound. Well, I'm a big fan of Jordan Davis. Always get that wrong. He's got a song called Next Thing You Know, and it's all about it goes through a love story from meeting this person, how quickly life goes by, and then at the end they end up as old people. It's a beautiful, beautiful storytelling. Let's say Sunshine by Shepherd. Got to add a Shepherd song in there. That's one that I take lead on. I had just so much fun singing on that song, and I think it's just like a fresh sound for Shepherd. So go and listen to that one. And fifth song would be Scarlet by Holly Humberstone. She's a UK artist, yep. And she's about to support Taylor Swift in Wembley, I think it is. She's just another fresh young artist. I really love her songwriting.
Next up, George, let's hear your list.
Well, thanks for giving me the most amount of time to think about this. I've been able to curate my own list.
Okay.
So for me, I like a lot of old school, like 60s music. So I think Minnie Riperton, Le Fleur was a big one for me. Like going through my like early 20s, I listened to a lot of that kind of music. So that would be one of my favorites. Billie Eilish's new album. I'm really liking the very final track, the album closer, Blue. It's one of those songs that just switches halfway through and becomes something completely different. And what it switches into, I first heard it, it just like made me stop what I was doing and just like sit there and listen to it. It was so beautiful, and the strings for some reason. Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas, who produces all their stuff, they just get the most incredible sound, like a wall of sound, but it's so delicate.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the best at doing that. Song number three, we discovered this new artist the other night here in Nashville. His name's Ben Goldsmith, and he was supporting an Australian band that we were going to see. And he has a song called Wish We Never Met, which I've been getting into just the last couple of days. Like, I haven't even known of this guy for a week, and I'm loving his music. There was another song that came on my Spotify just randomly. It was called Discotheque Inside My Head by a band called Telenova. I don't know anything about them, but I heard this song on a bike ride recently, and it was just the perfect song for going through this park that I was in. And for me, music's very visual, and it's like brings up like colors, and like I love remembering where I was when I heard a song. And yeah, this was just like right song in the right place. And then the final song would be Ben Rector, Love Like This. Definitely one of my all-time favorite songs. The melody and the lyrics are just so beautiful. It feels like a Pixar song. You know, it's one of those like You Got a Friend in Me type songs that just warms your heart. And the story of the song, that he's just completely grown to a new man after he's met the love of his life. It was very relatable to me at the time. So I would have to say Ben Rector, Love Like This.
Wow, that's a great list of artists and songs. Some already on my list, some I need to add. So listeners, go search and find Shepherd's new album called Zora. Listen to it, share it, and maybe buy the physical. And look out when they're going to be next performing live in your town or your area, and get tickets to experience that connection, the music, and the energy. Celeb Savant, signing out.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.